Good morning.
Good morning.
Working on the Friendology series, if you haven't been here in the last few weeks. Friendology is sort of an odd term, but I'm hoping that after today we'll have a better understanding of it. I appreciate you all working with us on the name tags this morning. Phil reminded me that that's the only way that you all can keep from mixing me and John Keyes up, so that's one of the reasons for the name tags. But in review, over the last few weeks, we've talked about several different types of friendships. We've talked about loving friendships, compassionate friendships, healthy friendships, and authentic friendships. And my turn today, I'm talking about faithful friendships, and my subtitle for today's sermon is not quantity, but quality. And what I've done, if you'll bear with me for a few minutes, is I've attempted to break down faithful friendships in my own terminology. And as I've thought about this over my life and the things that have happened to me, I have decided that faithful friendships involve three particular things: availability, accountability, and transparency. Now, this is just my own personal definition, but I want you to think about it. I think after we get through, you'll probably agree with me. These three things that determine a faithful friendship sort of work in a circle together. And I put availability at the top because I think that's kind of one of the most important things. But they all kind of spin around in this main circle that would establish a faithful friendship. And if you think about those three things, if you're missing one of those entities in a faithful friendship, your friendship probably isn't a faithful one. Now, I looked at availability. And I wanted to give you an example from the Bible specifically, and I went to Job, and we're coming from Job 2, 11, 13. And if you know Job's story, he was a very rich, prosperous man of God, a devout man, and one day something happened in his life and he ended up losing everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. He lost his home, he lost his wealth, he lost his family. Everybody was killed. Everything was destroyed. Man went from the top to the bottom in one day. Everything was messed up. But he had three friends. And I want you to read what it says here, what happened with those three friends. It says, when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, they came, each one from his own place, and they made an appointment together to come to sympathize with him and comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes at a distance and did not recognize him, they raised their voices and wept. And each of them tore his robe and they threw dust over their heads toward the sky. Then they sat down on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights, with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. Availability. They came, they saw him suffering, they felt his pain, and they didn't do like we do when, in a lot of cases, if somebody calls us and something happened to us, we're going to try to give them all kind of advice. Oh, you know, you need to get help. You need to go to a psychologist. You need to try this program. You need to read this book. Sometimes you just need to shut up. They came, and they sat with him, and they didn't say nothing because sometimes you just need somebody to be there. You need an available person. And I put that at the top because that's a faithful friend. You know, people will say, hey, man, if you ever need me, call me. You call, you can't get them. You don't ever see them. They're gone on vacation or whatever. People aren't available. They can't really be faithful friends. So that's at the top of my list as far as a faithful friendship. Second part of it is accountability. And then I went to this verse in Proverbs, which says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. And I had to think about this thing because I said, if somebody is wounding you, how can they be a faithful friend? And as I dug into this a little bit more, it was determined that, you know, sometimes those people that mean the best for you are the ones that really hold you accountable. They will tell you, you know something? I like you and everything, but you are doing some stupid stuff and it's messing up your life. And we don't like for people to tell us we're doing stupid stuff, do we? Usually it's the people that are closest to us that know all of the stupid stuff we're doing. But they're holding you accountable. Now, I didn't talk about this last service, but I got to point out to my wife because she lives with me. She knows me better than anybody in here. She knows all the stupid stuff I do. And I do so much stupid stuff, she tells me about it all the time, and it just makes me think. Sometimes it ruins my self-esteem because it makes me think I'm a real stupid person. I'm like, there's nothing good about me. But she holds me accountable because she loves me. And if you can find a friend that can hold you accountable, that you can look you in the eye and tell you something that needs to turn you, that'll help you turn your life around, that's a good accountable friend. The other side of this is that deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. And you can have those other people that are around you, that'll hype you up, that'll talk to you about all kind of good stuff and make you feel good. And then the next thing you know, if something bad happens to you, they're gone. So watch out for those people that are always loving up to you and hugging up to you, because a lot of times they don't mean you anything good. The last thing is transparency. And I wanted to review this verse out of Ephesians. Ephesians is a book written by Paul to a church, the church in Ephesus. So this is a letter that is being written to a church, so you can kind of take this as just something that's being said to you. And it says here, and I use the Message interpretation of this, what this adds up to then is this: no more lies, no more pretense. Tell your neighbor the truth. In Christ's body, we are all connected to each other. After all, when you lie to others, you end up lying to yourself. That's a hard message to talk about in church, that we would come in here and that we would lie to each other. What kind of place would this be? But this is a letter written to the church, and I want to tell you how this happens sometimes. Not that I would necessarily be deceitful to you or tell you something completely wrong, but we come in church a lot of times and we put on this, what I call, church face. How you doing? Oh, I'm blessed. You know, I'm happy. Everything is good. And your life is falling apart. And you come here, you try to get a little bit of relief. You know, you try to hear some good music, you try to hear the word, and then you leave out of here, and you go back to that same mess you were in, and that cycle repeats itself. This verse encourages us that we need to get up off of that. If we're going to be a community, the community that God truly wants us, if we're going to ever establish any faithful friendships, we got to be transparent with each other. So I come back to this circle again. And one thing I left out of this slide, in this circle, in this community of Christians, the middle of that circle needs to be Christ. Because none of this is going to work unless it's Christ-centered. Because I'm going to tell you something. You can get this circle, you can go look up a counselor in the phone book and go pay them some money, and I guarantee you they're going to be available, they're going to be accountable, they're going to be transparent, and they're going to make you transparent, but you're paying for it. But it's not Christ-centered, and this is why a lot of times when we go to those people, even with this particular situation, it is a simulation of what God really wants for us. It's a simulation of faithful friendship. Remind you, not quantity, but quality. Now, if you were listening a little bit when I came up on stage, I played a little theme song to represent our friendology thing. Y'all know what that theme song was?
Cheers.
Cheers. Y'all a little older than I thought you were. Some of the young people might not know about Cheers, but this was an icon of the 80s, a very popular TV show. It lasted actually 11 or 12 years. You got all of these characters that people know. Just about all of these people from this particular show had spinoffs of their own shows, and they were rich and famous back then, but they're even more rich and famous now. But what it did, it depicted a bar, a neighborhood bar that everybody came to. And, you know, they had sort of disorganized, disjointed lives, and that's what made the show kind of funny. And, you know, we could kind of pick one of these characters and kind of relate to them ourselves. So I think that's what really clicked with pop culture when this show came out. But the one thing that people will remember, it's kind of one of those songs like the Beverly Hillbillies and stuff like that. People always remember the lyrics to this song. Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to go where people know the people are all the same. You want to go where everybody knows your name. You know, I like coming here to this church, and over the last 6-7 years that my wife and I have attended here, I've gotten to know a lot of you, and it's really a great feeling to be greeted at the door by people that know my name and don't necessarily have to, I don't have to have a name tag for them to know me. And I've gotten to know some of you, and it makes me feel really good. But I have a confession to make. When the sermon team put this Friendology series together, I wasn't really all that down with it. Because I'm not that guy. I don't easily connect to people. And I might smile, and I might have a good conversation with you. But let me tell you, I'm going to try to make that conversation as short as possible, and I'm going to leave, and I want to be by myself. I'm just being totally honest. So when we brought up these concepts of friendology, and we talked about things like making a map of your neighborhood and going to find the people that lived around you and stuff like that was kind of foreign to me because I keep to myself, and it really makes me uncomfortable. And you can very easily come up with a lot of excuses why I don't necessarily need to connect to this person two doors down because they may be a weirdo. You know, I got this map and it talks about all of the child molesters in my neighborhood. And, you know, this person across the street, literally this person across the street has a political flag hanging up and down on his pole. And because he's got that thing on his pole, flagpole, I don't want to talk to them because I know that's not going to be anybody that I want to deal with. So this whole friendology thing was something that just kind of freaked me out. And it freaked me out even more because I had to come up here and talk to y'all about it. So I'm just being real. But you know what? I see the value in it. I see the value. And I had you, and I thank for you all to put these name tags on, because these name tags, actually, if you're wearing, when I first came to church here, bouncing around, they gave me this. Anybody remember these? Every new member would get a name tag, and we'd wear. I wore this for 1 week, and I never wore it again. I kept it. I didn't throw it away. I appreciate the name tag, and I love y'all and stuff like that. I don't want y'all not to talk to me after the service is over, but, you know, the name tag, it kind of represents that availability, accountability, and transparency thing, believe it or not. Because something happens when you display your name and you expose yourself to everybody else. That immediately makes you available and accountable. The transparency has to come after somebody calls you because they didn't read your name. And they say, hey, Jim, hey, Bill, hey, Chris. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got this name tag on. Now I'm accountable for going over and talking to this person. They're going to ask me to do something that I don't want to do, and now I'm going to have to be transparent and say I don't want to do it because I don't want to be accountable. You see how that kind of works? It's kind of crazy. So I appreciate y'all doing this because I know y'all like me. As soon as you get out of here, you're going to rip this thing off because nobody to know who you are. I'm just being real. But there's something very important in a name, in getting to know people. When we went from Cheers in the 80s, we got into something called technology. And Cheers gives us a certain situation of warped friendships and you know, people going to a bar. And I say, it's really something wrong if you walk in a bar and everybody knows your name. I think... I might have to be transparent with you and hold you accountable and say, you got a problem if you can walk into the bar down the street and everybody knows your name. But something happened, something moved from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s called technology, and the whole idea, the whole definition of friendship sort of changed, and we started doing this thing. We got Facebook, we got Twitter, we got Snapchat, we got YouTube, and you remember the deal with friends and the reason that I put quality, not quantity, in. When Facebook first came out, the first question people would ask you, how many Facebook friends do you have? And I would have to tell them I got maybe 8 or 9. And then look at you like you're stupid. Oh, you don't have any more friends than that? you must not like anybody. Nobody likes you. So then you start moving toward getting more and more Facebook friends, virtual friends. And I thought about the word virtual because y'all know I like to do this word thing when I preach and help y'all understand what I'm talking about. And I went into synonyms of virtual, and it came up with assumed, presumed, supposed, or so-called. The mere idea of virtual says it ain't real. So if most of your friends are internet friends, they ain't real. Now, I don't want to tell you to get rid of all your Facebook people because I interact with a lot of you all on Facebook, and I have more than 12 friends now. And thanks to this church, a lot of you are my Facebook friends. And it serves a good, and it can serve a good purpose. All of these can serve a good purpose if they are used in the right way. But this thing of virtuality, it brought me back to something that I was reminded of in the Bible. And if something's not real, I thought about this thing that happens to us all the time. We're always drawn to something away from what God wants us to be. What's the opposite of a friend? An enemy. So we need to be very careful because that virtual friend could actually be an enemy. And he exposed himself way back in the book of Genesis, in the Garden of Eden. I went to 2 Corinthians 11. It says, I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. So we take this beautiful thing that God established for us because he wants us to be friends. And the first thing that Satan does is he tries to disrupt the harmony between Adam and Eve, and then between the family. And you have a situation where the two who loved each other and were each other's helpmeets, one is pointing fingers at the other, blaming somebody else for it. This situation breaks up. They have two children. One brother kills another. Everything quickly disintegrates and falls apart because we're led astray by Satan. And we take a situation in Genesis and we put it into a computer and we multiply it among however many virtual friends we're trying to get. And that's just a surfboard for Satan to ride on. Because people say stuff over the internet. You know, the Bible tells us about the tongue and how the tongue is sharper than a two-edged sword and how it can cut us. Well, it talks about the word cutting us, but how bad it is, we need to watch what we say. How much worse is it that we write something and it goes out to thousands of people? Now, I can say something to Paul that might not be nice. The rest of y'all ain't gonna hear it. But if I put something on Facebook to him that ain't so nice, the rest of y'all will see it, and it further disrupts my reputation. It disrupts our friendship and our situation, and it makes it that much worse. So this whole concept of friendship is something that we really need to be careful with, and especially the concept of a faithful friend, because as I said before, quality, not quantity. If we have a faithful friend in our life, it don't need to be but a couple of people, a few people. And they change places as you transition from one part of life to the other. I especially want to speak out to the graduates because I think about many, many years ago when I was graduating and from high school to college or from college, you know, on to work. This is a very transitional period in your life. And I think about people that were near and dear to me that I hung out with on a daily basis, that when I graduated and our lives situation changed, I never saw them again. And I have a lot of fond memories and dear memories of them, but they're not a part of my life anymore. But as as you maneuver through where God would have you to be, you end up interacting with other people that are going to be a blessing to you. Now, let's talk about what's not a blessing. Proverbs 13:20, a companion of fools suffer harm. How many of y'all hang out with fools?
Somebody raised their hand.
Most people won't admit that they hang out with fools. And a lot of times you don't know you're dealing with a fool until you end up being in a foolish situation. 2 Corinthians 6:14, don't team up with those who are unbelievers. How can the righteous be partnered with the wicked? Now, I don't want you to get this situation mixed up, because we can get in a holier-than-thou attitude and say, oh, I'm a Christian. I wouldn't dare be seen with that person. And that's not what this verse is talking about. Because if you read the New Testament, they didn't like Jesus because they said Jesus was a friend of sinners. Jesus was always at the party. He provided the wine for the party. He was always hanging out with the people that people didn't like, the undesirables. So doesn't mean that we separate ourselves. What it means is that we represent him in a situation where there are unbelievers and not be dragged down into what they're doing. Proverbs 12:26, the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Something else happens, and I'm blaming it on my mom. My mom said, everybody ain't your friend. Anybody heard that? Anybody had people tell him that? So we get into the situation where we did all the stuff that those verses told us not to do, and we have broken relationships. We have people that have hurt us, that people that have devastated and ruined our lives because Satan has intervened, and we're blaming that person or that person. It really is all Satan not wanting us to have the life that he wants us to live. So we go from having all of these friends to having none, and we isolate ourselves. That's not good either. Proverbs 18:1 says, one who has isolated himself seeks his own desires. He rejects all sound judgment. Genesis 2:18 says, the Lord God said, it is not good for a man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. So we go from wanting everybody, and then we get broken and we get hurt and we get down to wanting nobody. And we end up being alone. I'm kind of a music guy, and since y'all knew about Cheers, y'all know about this. There is one line in a Billy Joel song that always caught my attention. In The Piano Man, he says, as he's talking about the people in the bar, they're sharing a drink called loneliness, but it's better than drinking alone. All of these people in the bar, they're really lonely people. Now, I always invite people to come to church, invite a couple of my friends to come to church. And one of my friends consistently tells me, I'll come and listen to you speak, but I don't need church. Anybody talk to anybody, know anybody that says that? I don't need church. I'm good. I don't need church. And I would venture to say that they're probably right. I talked to you all last time I preached about church, Chinese restaurant, and a liquor store, and all of them are always in the neighborhood. And if you look at a situation between a bar and a church, there are lots of similarities. Because what you have is a bunch of broken people going into a place that they think everybody else is just like them, and they go in there and they look for some type of relief. But this is the difference. I do not need a religious institution in my life because there's so many of them. Three or four in this neighborhood I can go to. What makes one better than the other? Tell you what I need. I need you. I need you. I need you. I need you. We need each other. And this is what this whole friendology thing is about. Because we can walk in here, a bunch of broken people, listen to some decent music, listen to some speaker get up here and put us to sleep, and go back home and be in the same situation as we was before. And this is why people have said, you know what? I don't need that. I can do a little bit better. I can go to a bar and have some fun. I can hang out with my friends. I don't need that because none of those people are real. And we, brothers and sisters, we've done that, and we need to represent better. We're the salt and the light, right? These verses validate why we need each other. It says, and as Frank read this in his communion meditations, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Ecclesiastes 4:12. A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. And I didn't say this the first sermon, but this made me think about being alone. It says Satan goes to and fro like a roaring lion. And you know, lions don't try to get the whole herd. They try to separate one animal off and attack that animal by itself. So when we get ourselves in situations and we're ashamed to be transparent, to call on each other, to look for that help, what Satan chooses to do is he tends to isolate us and put us in a situation by ourselves. And then that mind goes bad. And we end up being depressed and lonely. It's not good for anybody. The other thing that my mama taught me is that when I made all of those bad decisions and I messed up and people hurt me and I thought they were my friends and they ended up being virtual friends and things were going good and they were always around and then stuff started happening bad and it seems like they all left, that there's one friend that you do need to have, and that's Jesus Christ. And that's why Christ needs to be in that circle. This was also read during communion, John 15:15. I no longer call you servants because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, I call you friends. For everything that I've learned from my Father, I have made known to you. And one of the things that stands out is all of the songs that my mother used to sing and that I learned as a young boy. And they talked about Jesus and his friendship. The first song I learned as a kid, which I hope we're still singing to the little ones, is Jesus loves me, this I know. And I had to come to a concept of I do have someone that loves me if everybody else leaves me alone. What a friend we have in Jesus. I'm like, why are all of these songs talking about Jesus being a friend? Great is thy faithfulness. Morning by morning, new mercies I see. If you think about the lyrics of these songs, it means something. I found a friend in Jesus. I'm a friend of God. We sang that this morning. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. I'm kind of old school, and you might not like hymns, but there's meaning in these. Even if you can't sing them, you need to go back and read some of them. In the garden, I come to the garden alone, but he walks with me, and he talks with me. And he tells me that I am his own. The true knowledge that when everybody else is gone and I have nothing else, I can still call on Jesus and he's going to be there for me is what keeps me going. Because y'all might not be available, but I tell you what, he can keep me going till one of you are available, till you can grab my arm and help pull me up and help bring me back to where I need to be. That's why the church is important. He knows us. I wore this name tag. Everybody asks, why you got Sam on your name tag? My name is Samuel Christopher Freeman. And I know one thing. If I run into anybody randomly that looks at me and says, hey, Sammy Freeman, I know that they really know me because nobody, not even my wife, knew me as Sammy Freeman. Somebody that knows me is Sammy Freeman. They grew up with me. They started out early with me. They lived in my neighborhood. They were my first few buddies. And I thought about this, about how well God knows us, and I went to this verse in Psalms, and it says, "Oh Lord, you search me, and you know me, you know where I sit, and you know where I stand, you understand my thoughts from afar. Behind and before you encircle me, and you rest your hand upon me. You formed my innermost being." Get this, "you knit me together in my mother's womb." If anybody has any question about abortion, this is the answer right here. That knitting together is conception. "When I was knit together, he knew me. He had plans for me. I praise you that I was wonderfully and fearfully made." This should boost your self-esteem. I don't care how you feel in here right now. God has a purpose for you. "Even my bones were not hidden from you as I was made and fashioned in secret. Your eyes foresaw all my actions, and all my days were written in your book before one of them ever came to be." That should be an encouragement to somebody here today. So I asked Mitch to help me out here because this is a song that's been blessing me, and I want to share it with you. But when I look at my name tag, I want you to think about your name tag too, and I want you to think about whatever name is on that tag. God knows you. He knows your name. And if you don't know him, he wants to get to know you. So we're going to share this music together a little bit, and then we're going to give you an opportunity that if you do not know him, if you don't know who he is, we want to pray with you, and we want to give you an opportunity. Two people came up after last service and gave their hearts to Jesus Christ. We always have the baptism pool ready. So, and I'm not asking you, if you ain't ready to jump in the water, that's fine, but we got a lot of good people here that'll grab you, hold you. We won't judge you, but we want to talk about you, and we want to tell you about our friend, Jesus Christ. All right.
He knows my name. He knows my name.
Yeah, he knows me.
He knows my name.
He knows your name too.
He knows my name. And oh, how he walks with me. And oh, how he talks with me. Oh, how he tells me that I am his own.
You know my name. You know my name. You know my name. You know my name.
Lord, you know my name.
And oh, how you comfort me. And oh, how you counsel me. Yes, it still amazes me that I am your friend. So now I pour out my heart to you. Here in your presence, I am made new.
Yes, I am.
So now I pour out my heart to you. Here in presence, I am made new.
Come on, y'all join us. It's a real easy song.
You know my name.
Lord, you know us. You knew us before we were born.
You know my name.
Can we worship him today?
You know my name. You know my name.
Oh, how you walk with me.
And oh, how you walk with me. And oh, how you talk with me.
Oh, how you tell.
And oh, how you tell me.
Anybody wants to come meet our friend Jesus, come up and talk to my friends.
Hearing your presence, I am made new.
Lord, I pour my heart out.
So now I pour out my heart to you. Hearing your presence, I am made new.
Sing it one more time. Lord, you know my name.
You know my name. You know my name. You know my name. How you walk with me, and know how you talk with me, and know how you tell me that I am your own. Oh, how you walk with me. Talk with
I want to
me.
Encourage any of you that need to get to know Jesus better, please come up
oh,
and see these
how
people.
You tell
you're ready
me.
To give your life to him. The baptism is always already ready. Connect
I
with each other, get
own.
To know each other, love each other, and go be the church. Amen. You know my name.